Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Jenny Olson,
Alison Milden,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Jenny, you're from a long-standing local family, and you were saying that you know of some of your father's memories.
Dad always took great delight in sharing his memories of the early part of Palmerston North, and he was born into Palmerston North in 1909. He talked of the works tram that used to travel from the river up Albert Street, as what was originally known as Scandia Street, to the works depot on the corner of what is now known as Ferguson Street and Albert Street. That works depot is now still operated by the City Council. The tram was horse-drawn and it carried metal that had been excavated from the river, hauled up Albert Street, and then the trucks on it had tipping sides, so they would drop the side of the bucket and it would tip to whichever side they wanted it once it got to the depot.
When you say metal, you mean the pebbles and things from the river, the loose stones?
It hadn't been graded or screened, it was just straight metal from the river to keep the river at a certain area and not have it everywhere else.
So it was dredged from the river for the flow of the river. And what was it? Was it used for roads?
Used for roads.
Okay. So they put that as the base layer, did they?
Yes.
And
also memories of the 1941 flood, of how the water came up Scandia Street and went up as far
as now Ferguson. Albert Street. Okay.
And went as far as the works depot. That there's a rise as you go down Albert Street. You go down and when you get to Ferguson Street, it's lower than Church Street.
Yeah.
And the water went right up to there. And I have a photo of Dad and two friends walking up the Albert Street. The river, the water is chest height. They have got their arms linked shoulder to shoulder, hanging on to each other, and the water level was at the same level as the windowsills of the Hoka Whitu school.
Right. So there was a lot of development in that area that was flooded out by that, was there?
Yep. It certainly wasn't as developed as it was now, but both Shayla's nurseries and Kingsby's nurseries suffered damage, and the houses through there suffered damage. Okay. And when we were looking to buy a section for a house after we got engaged in 1963, Dad's warning words that kept ringing at us were, do not buy a section on the riverside of Church Street. Do not put your faith in stock banks.
Okay, when
the motor scheme went through and Dad took us down for the opening of those gates, it was still, do not put your faith in the stock banks.
Yes, my father was the same. The same. And
subsequent floods, of course, have shown that. And now, of course, they don't dredge the rivers like they used to. And that's why flooding is much more prone. I mean, when I was at work, one of my first jobs in an accountant's office, they were also the accountants for the Sluggish River drainage scheme. And we paid, the people was paid from our office. But they dredged on an annual basis. They had a program whereby they dredged all of the streams and creeks in the Kopene area. And so they would go along with a drag line, dig it out and put it up, slowly make the stock bank higher. But now the theory is that you don't do that. So consequently, at the Kopene Bridge, where you used to be able to put a carriage and horses underneath it. Now you can hardly put a car because they are not dredging and keeping the rivers lower to allow for the, all the extra water that's coming down. It's simple maths. Simple, old style looking after the land.
And you grew up in a farming area, did you?
No, I actually grew up in town, but I was lucky in that Dad had the nurseries and we had acres to play on.
So what was he growing in the nurseries?
The nursery started off as AJ Shaler and Son, and they specialised in carnations, roses, dahlias and chrysanthemums initially.
And who bought those? Is it local? Or?
They were used for local florists, and the dahlias and chrysanthemums were shown at big floral shows all around New Zealand. And in actual fact, Dad claims that they were the first people to have a commercial flight out of Palmerston North Airport in a little two-winged plane when they flew flowers down to Christchurch or Dunedin, can't just remember which one. And there's a photo of Dad and the pilot and Granddad with these big wooden boxes with all the flowers packed in them, into them, all named. They would go down, you would put them in a show stand, three flowers of one plant in a vase with sphagnum moss to hold them in. And I proofread and knew Dad's catalogue back to front. And when the shows were in Palmerston North in the Astoria Ballroom, I stood on that stand from Friday after school until the end of Saturday talking. And that was his next income. The more tubers he sold of any one day, that was then went out, and that was his income for the next year.
Okay, so he was selling tubers rather than the flowers?
Yes. But you had the flowers, so you could see what you looked at. Looking at a tuber wouldn't tell you what the flower was like, or its style, or type, or colour, or anything like that.
So these were for people's home gardens in town?
All over New Zealand.
Okay. Yeah. So he could ship them all over the country?
They shipped all over. The chrysanthemums were more grown for the floral tributes and bridal bouquets and maternity use. When I first started working with my aunt, who was the florist person, as part of it, rather than in the garden, the most common thing sent to a maternity home, and this would be back, I'm talking mid-50s, was either a blue or a pink little potty with a lovely...
A little what?
Potty for a baby.
A baby's potty. Oh, a baby's potty with flowers in. Okay. Yes.
With a lovely flower arrangement in it.
Okay.
So you filled the potty with sphagnum moss and you put your flowers in, and then it went and covered it in cellophane, and it went up to the maternity home.
And that's all gone now, isn't it?
Yeah, and Dad made all the boxes for shipping the flowers around the country. For the shows, they were like pallet construction, but they were wide enough to put some there and quite long. You could just, they were only single layer flowers.
Sort of untreated pine boxes?
Came from milling slabs from the Turitea sawmill.
Oh, okay.
And Dad did it all on a circular saw.
Yeah, okay. So did you get involved in the... Are you a keen gardener after that, or you just avoid it like...
No, I'm a dead keen gardener. Before I moved into town, we spent 40 years living at Whakaronga, and I had 10 acres of park and garden. Had 1,000 belladonna bulbs, and I had over 100 dahlias.
So that was
all got
for
left
your,
behind.
Yes.
That was for your own pleasure, or
that was for my own pleasure.
And what has happened to that?
I don't know. Haven't been back. Don't want to know.
No, it's often best not to.
I shifted the plants that meant the most to me, and most of those I had salvaged from Mum and Dad's house before it was sold. And those are in my front garden.
So 10 now, acres, you started from scratch though, did you?
We started from scratch. Mm-hmm. And we started initially with pigs, and then we went into sheep, and we always made sure that we lambed at school holiday time so that the kids could do the lambing beats while we were at work.
Okay, the lambing beats.
Lambing beat.
Which means what?
Which means going around the sheep and making sure that one hasn't got a lamb stuck halfway out or isn't lying down trying to expel a lamb when it's stuck.
So how old were the kids who were doing that?
11, 12.
Okay.
And the oldest would have been about that, and the younger two would have been 5 and 6, and they went out with Murray, and the two girls were the youngest, and they went out with Murray, and Murray knew what he had to look for and how to do it. He was a brilliant hands-on kid with animals.
So he's grown up with that? He still does
He's still got animals. He's got a block up on Bridgeview Road.
Okay.
But the kids knew what to do.
You think they had a lot more independence now than now then? Or
they had a lot more respect, and they had a lot more nous about what they needed to do and not to go near drains or anything. They had boundaries as to where they were allowed to move, and we had two or three.
Swim. Did they learn to swim at school? Or?
They could learn to swim at school, and we had a big dam on our place because the fire board came out and surveyed it for local firefighting purposes, and it was something like 1 million litres of water in it. Nobody could duck shoot on it because it was too close to the road.
I thought you're not allowed to shoot if the ducks are on the water, you're not allowed to
shoot. Oh, well, you can frighten them off, you see, but you were still too close to the road, so they couldn't do it.
Okay.
But the kids had a boat that they used up and down the lake. Up and down the dam.
Rowing boat? Sailing boat?
A rowing boat.
Yeah.
I've got to take a drink.
Yes, okay, you have a drink.
Yes, I was just relating to quite a lot of that over the floods. It may not have even... We had a farm at Kairanga, and it might not even have been raining here, but you'd look to the northeast and see what was happening. And my father, maybe on a moonlit night, he would get in the car, and it was not the rivers, it was the drains.
It meant
and
drain.
He would drive around out towards, you know,
Bainisea and through there.
Looking at the drains, he'd
Pike
come
Road
home
out through
and
there.
Say, we have to move the sheep.
Yep.
So it's water coming off the ranges rather than through the gorge.
Yes, all this business of how we're responsible for flood protection here is because rain has and water has poured down from another.
And the Mungoni was also a key one for flooding farmland as well.
And in fact, he caught somebody from the city council going to blow the banks because they were thinking, oh, the city, but to heck with farmers.
In terms of the total damage, but presumably you'd be compensated, but they should warn you first, wouldn't they?
I doubt it.
No,
they wouldn't do it.
And farmland that has been flooded for more than a day goes sour.
Yeah, because the grass dies.
Grass dies, and it takes virtually a whole season to bring it back
and
to good
no
pasture. No.
So what about now with the floodgates? They give farmers warning to move stock, and then they open the floodgates, and that kills off the grass as well.
It kills off the grass and there's no
compensation
and the floodway. But no, because the farmers are only using it as a grant from the people that control the whole of the water. They're only keeping the grass.
Yeah.
And so they get a warning that it's going to happen so that they can move the stock that they might have in there.
Yeah. Okay.
And they also get regular updates as to the level that the water is going through there so that if it overflows, they've got move stock further apart as well, particularly at Opeke, because that will always flood at Opeke, even when the gates are open, because it's low and the road floods, so you can't get through anyway, because the floodgates are situated on the Foxton Shannon Highway.
Now, so from what you're saying, was there much of a divide between town and country then, if there's this different perception?
No.
You see it differently.
Well, I think there would have been a certain lack of understanding from the city. And even now, I guess, district councils around Lockwood, for example, can flood, but you know, district council still allowing development, still allowing that they seem to not want historical knowledge.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with you, Alison, even to the point that the city council at one point was saying, giving permission down Pioneerway end of town to build in the back of Amberley down there by the racecourse.
Oh, the racecourse stuff, yes.
And that was floodplain. Noted as floodplain, and they were still giving permission for people to, for developers to build. Yeah. It's idiotic.
Yeah. And is it good farmland as well if it's floodplain?
That's pretty good farmland if it's flooding.
Well, certainly the river plains. I mean, all down Botanical Road used to be market gardening. You'd remember that.
Absolutely.
That's interesting.
And Tremaine Avenue was initially known as Boundary Road as well.
Yeah.
I grew up knowing it as Boundary Road.
But we're not so far off Botanical Road here. But it's clay just under a small amount of topsoil.
It's known as Manor to Loam.
Okay. All right, clay. You mean the name for clay is Manor to Loam, and is it fertile? It's too. Okay.
Well, it would depend where you were, but certainly where it flooded would be quite fertile.
Yes, you get all the new deposit.
And of course, all around Te Mata Road.
Well, they're doing the same thing again, aren't they? The
that area was
down
just
there. Oh, it's complete madness.
So obviously, things have changed a lot in your time. What stands out most? I mean, obviously there's been a lot of new development. Do you think, has it improved?
Well, the city has grown enormously. I mean, I grew up with a city that was bounded by Boundary Road, or Tremaine Avenue as it is now, Botanical Road, the
there
river.
Was the train.
And the railway line.
Yeah.
The railway line to Napier, as it was. And the train went through the centre of the city. The number of times I have rewashed sheets because a train went through and they blew their whistles at every railway crossing through the city. And if the wind was the wrong way, the smuts landed on Mum's washing. It all had to be redone. And that was a mission in those days to do washing.
Yeah.
Because you had to wash in a copper.
Which is a big,
big bowl with a fire underneath it.
Yeah.
You fished it all out with a pogo stick.
Just a long wooden,
heavy, very heavy pole. Put it through the ringer. Put it in the rinse water. Then through the ringer, which was
the ringer manual or
manual or a mangle, as it was so known. Into the next tub, which had a blue bag in it to keep your whites white, then out of the blue, back through the ringer, making sure it doesn't go into the next tub, which you rinse water was in, catching it all and putting it in the basket and then taking it out to the line.
Now your blue bag, this is the...
It also helped keep for bee stings.
So a blue bag, it's a small bag, just over a centimetre square, say...
Round.
Round.
And about three fingers deep.
Okay. And it's
and you put a whole blue bag into one tub of water.
So there's something blue in it, and the blue makes the white look whiter?
Yeah, it's a real blue. It's a vivid deep blue.
Deep blue.
We were just talking about blue bags 2 days ago because Richard, my brother, they're going through the family homestead and collecting up stuff, and it's going into the museum, and one of the things is a blue bag.
And you add a little scrub board for your heavier, more soiled things, and you it hung on your tub.
Like a washboard,
and it had metal bars that came towards you, and the washboard went into the tub, and you scrubbed it up and down, and you used bars of sunlight soap.
How long did it take to do a normal load of washing? And would you wash clothes now? These days, you might wear something once and wash it. Would you wear something for a week and wash it?
Did you have two of everything? So two changes for school that lasted a week. Two, you had shorts, rompers for the weekend. You hardly had any clothes.
They hardly had any clothes because it was all coming out of the depression, and there wasn't the bulk of my wardrobe was hand-me-downs from my cousins, my two girl cousins who were older than me. I got one new dress a year, and that was for show day, which was the first weekend in November. I could wear it to that, and then it was Sunday school anniversary the following weekend, and all the girls all had new dresses for Sunday school anniversary weekend. Mm-hmm. And that was the dress that got you through that summer.
So you'd only wash it sort of once a week or so?
If you smelled something down it as a kid, it needed work. But yes, it was treated well. It didn't, you hand wash that. There was a lot of hand washing done, and we used Lux Flakes for hand washing.
Is that spot washing, or you'd wash the whole? You'd
wash the whole dress and hand wash it.
Okay.
You wouldn't put it in the tub to boil it.
Yeah. You boil it in the copper.
You boil it in the copper.
Does that damage the material?
That was how you got your hot water.
Okay.
Because the little cylinders didn't have enough virtually to fill the bath.
The little cylinder.
The little hot water cylinder.
So did you hear, was it a sort of, is it a fire back? From your stove.
You had a wet back on your
wet back, which heats up the kitchen water, range. But it doesn't do much. And then you carry it in a bucket to the bath, or you'd have taps?
We had taps. Yeah,
But we would bath in two inches of water.
And the whole family used the same water.
And the last one would have really dirty water? Is it fresh water for each one?
It was not like that at all. All this 99.9% of household germs and rubbish like that is just ridiculous. And this wash,
when
just
you
because
say no, you mean these no, things that no, they, no, see, these, they these kill 99.9%? These are all good bacteria that you thrive on.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And you didn't.
You didn't worry,
No. But you weren't dirty.
Yes. Now, before we started recording, you mentioned about stoves as well and cooking. In fact, you mentioned it just now. We've got 3 or 4 minutes before we stop. But there was a story you said about your father and the soot.
The houses in those days had shacklock stoves. They were wood burning or coal burning, and there was at one end of it, took about a third of the size of the unit, and then you had a big oven with a thermometer on the other end of it. You had a very heavy metal top plate where you cooked your food, casseroles, etc., as well as always had a kettle on there for hot water. And above that, there was sort of a tin plate that went along the whole of the top of the stove, and that went up and into the chimney, and that was known as the register.
What was it there for?
To channel the smoke from the fire across the top and out the chimney. And one
so
morning,
sort of angled, was it?
No, it was flat.
Just flat.
One morning, Dad couldn't get the fire to quite light quick enough, and I was sitting there having breakfast with him, so he put some turps or something like that into it just to give it a boost there, he said. And the next thing, bang, the register fell out, the room was, kitchen was covered in soot, and as I was sitting with my back to the stove, I was covered in soot. My white school blouse was not fit to be worn to school. Dad got the thick end of Mum's tongue for the mess, and the whole kitchen had to be totally washed as well as me before I went to school.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.